there's been an evolution going on for the last 30 years and will continue to go on. But I feel that I have learned quite a bit. And for a musical artist, it isn't just finding your voice as a writer. It's finding your voice as a presenter of music, too, both on stage and in the studio. So I think I've learned to produce records in the way that I would like them to sound, the way I envision them in my head.
What was different? What have you found that you are able to do now that you weren't able to do, say, 20 years ago?
I'm much better at communicating my vision to other musicians. And, you know, it's very different, you know, for a painter or a poet or an author, because it's not as collaborative. With music, especially improvisational music, which half of this music is, the other half is actually composed and notated, and there's no questions about performance. But when you're dealing with improvisation, you have to kind of gently guide the musicians to the place that you want them to be. And it's taken me a long time to be able to describe that vision I have in my head.
I noticed on this album, it feels incredibly organic. It feels that you found a groove with the musicians there and with yourself, and that there's so many interesting introspective things happening.
Now, most of what you hear on this new album is live to tape. Well, we call it tape, yeah. But it's really not anymore. We call them albums, but they're really not anymore. And we call it a music business, but it really doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, it was live. And that's the thing that I like to capture in the studio, is layering can be interesting, and you can try to achieve a sort of elusive perfection with that, but there's no substitute to me for that magic that happens between artists in the same room. And there are some moments on this album, like guitar strings going that maybe other people would have removed, but my feeling was, don't touch it, because that's the sound that the instrument makes. And you know, it's wood with strings pulling on it, and it creaks, and now some of those creaking moments on the album are some of my favorites. And I love the space. You know, sometimes we would try to layer other instruments on because the arrangement felt too bare, but I missed the space. I missed hearing, you know, sound reverberating in the room because nothing was interrupting it. But I think a lot of people who have never been involved in making records don't realize the thousands of little decisions that you make from the time you begin writing a song to the time that you know, finish packaging the record and send it out into the world. So many micro decisions that you make that result at the final, you know, the final, you know, thing that you hear.
I like the use of the word space, because that, I think that's it. That's what I'm responding to when I listen to this. You're not afraid of the silences that are so necessary to music.
Mm-hmm. What's the mixture on this record? A few of the songs are pretty dense, like Lady Bird and mm-hmm. Go Down Moses and Black Sheep. But then there are other songs, like Maggie Said, where there are just long pauses where the sound just is given an opportunity to decay in the space. And I find that really beautiful. I mean, a lot of people are, with music, people are more concerned with the attack, you know, that sound of the instrument being plucked or you know, bowed or, you know, pounded on. But to me, it's what happens after you release. And I love the decay. I just think there's space is underrated, the space between the sounds.
I just heard something, Yo-Yo Ma talked about that music happens in the silence.
Well, and that's when the listener is absorbing. And if it's a barrage of sound, sometimes it's hard for the listener to take it in and have an emotional response to it. That's sometimes with a lot of really complex jazz or even complex symphonic music. Sometimes I feel like I'm overcome with a series of conflicting emotions. Too much emotional information mm-hmm. is being given to me in too little space of time.
Well, and you mentioned a little earlier about the idea that, you know, we call them albums, but they're no longer albums. But this feels very much like an album to me, even though so much of the way we take in music now doesn't have that expanse of time. We buy a song, we hear a fragment, we take in a video, but we might not hear or listen to the arc of the way you've put the album together. Are people responding to this as an album?
I think fragment is a really great word to describe how we take in so much of our information and entertainment these days, is fragmentarily. But I think I'm one of those artists who's card-carrying member of the Album Protectionist Society or the Album Preservationist Society, because I really do feel that this collection of songs belongs together in this sequence for me. And it's the way I really wanted it to be presented and preserved. And I find a lot of people have been responding it to like that, that they feel like it's something they want to hold in their hands and savor and really take in the way that they say they used to listen to albums long ago, 15 years ago.
Which is, an entire epoch when it comes to popular.
Nearly a generation.
Nearly a generation, yeah. And, I'm certainly of that generation where I listen to things in sequence, and I think about the care that the people who make the music, this is what I'm telling you, and this is how I want you to take it. And then, of course, it's up to the listener to go with it wherever they go with it. But to have the time and to have the luxury of that, and to have the thoughtful creation, I think that's it, too.
Well, we used to worship our albums when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I remember when one of our favorite artists would release a new album, we'd hear about it from a distance. It's coming, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month. And then when we would actually pick it up, we'd all gather together in a specific space with a great, stereo system and speakers. And I just remember the kind of reverence that we had for the album, and everyone would pass around the cover. And there would only be one iconic photograph and maybe lyrics if you were lucky, but it might just be a track listing and one iconic photograph. But still, that became the experience. And I understand that so much is available these days with video and a myriad of photographs that can be taken with a digital camera. I mean, everything is so much easier and so inexpensive to produce these days, and everyone's a broadcaster. Everyone can have access to their own audience directly through the internet. But there's something magical to me about this encapsulation of a moment in time in my life and the lives of these musicians that I spent these few weeks in the studio with. That stillness or that excitement or whatever it was, the emotion that was going on in that room, I still think there's something extremely magical that's captured here, whether it's on a piece of plastic or in an MP3 or whatever. I guess it doesn't matter how that is delivered to people anymore, but that's what I'm talking about when I talk about an album. It's a captured moment in time.
You've also talked about how much you enjoy as a writer stepping into other lives and writing from the experience of that person. And that certainly happened in this album, too. Is that a normal process in your songwriting, or is this something you adopted specifically for this album?
No, I think that's a device that I've been using for years. And I think with this album, I created several characters, and then I dialogue with them. And I don't think that dialoguing, I've described characters before more, or I've inhabited them and used first-person pronouns, to describe the experience from their point of view. But I think I dialogue more with the characters on this album. The first line on the album is, "Hey, Ladybird," and it's just the way, "Hey, Ladybird," and it's just the way. Right from the get-go, I'm talking to the character.
I also like you have on your website 4 videos from the album, and like the songs on the album, the videos connect too. They have the same palette, the same feel, and there was such thought in that too?
Well, Dan Winters is the photographer that I collaborated with for all the visuals on this project. And I think that we had a lot of conversations leading up to the session. We had a two-day session down in Austin, where he lives, in his studio. And we had a lot of conversations about how the album had expressed itself to him. And he said that, I definitely want to create a world for you to inhabit, a place in the photographs. And a lot of people have said that they're very atmospheric photographs, and then the videos were made at the same time. Many people have seen the Giving Up Everything video, and that was such a wonderful, spontaneous occurrence, that video. I mean, we made the entire video in less than an hour, and I probably only sang the entire song twice. And then we did little fragments. And all the props that I use in the video, I pulled off the wall or off tables and shelves in his studio. And when I compare it to the big era of MTV videos that I was a part of back in the late 80s, early 90s, when it would be a two-day shoot with 20 crew members, you know, film crew members, and that the budget could run up into the, you know, $200,000 to $400,000. That this is a video that I feel is far more expressive than anything I've ever made before. It was made in less than an hour with three people.
And that has that beautiful image at the end of you putting the glass bell over the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that just got me right in the core.
And that, like I said, all those props were just sitting there. We just ran around his studio and just collected a table full of objects, and the mask that I wear, the no theater mask from Japan, was a mask that his brother had brought back from Japan, and it was on the wall in his darkroom. Yeah, it was great.
That's wonderful.
Great.
Yeah.
Serendipitous.
Well, and it has that same feel as you were talking about the album being live to tape, live to film, live to whatever, you know. It feels that there is somehow that transmits over the medium, you know. And I just, what I love is that's still important, that's so important to you.
Well, it made making videos an integral part of the process and a creatively satisfying part of the process, that I wasn't handing the song over to a total stranger or a group of strangers and then just showing up for the video shoot and really not knowing what it was. I mean, I even sat with an editor and edited it myself. So there's something I really love about this, the accessibility of the technology these days is, from the very beginning, I was always very self-sufficient. Designing packages, designing posters, you know, all that sort of work. And now even making videos is within my grasp. And it's the same for everyone. It's amazing what has happened in the last 10 years that respect.
Do you think we've lost anything with that democratization of it? I mean, the idea of having an all-knowing producer that kind of comes in and fashions the work with you?
I could debate that for a while. I've learned some incredible recording techniques from some very talented producers, and I'm grateful to them for that. But I also have been very inhibited by producers and spent a lot of time arguing with producers and been sometimes disappointed with the work in the end, because I felt like I was trying to put myself through a filter. So, and sometimes producers who have worked for years have standard techniques, or they have musicians that they favor, that they like to work with. And, you know, sometimes decisions are made that you're not happy with. At least when you produce yourself, you've got no one to blame but yourself in the end, if you're not satisfied with the work. You know, I would love to find a producer that I could just hand everything to and trust, because it's difficult to be in the vocal booth and trying to be creative at the same time, making sure that you know, for whatever, that the catering is coming at 2 o'clock and the gear that you rented is going to show up on the day that you need it, and someone picks up the saxophone player from the train station, and, you know, all those little details that you have to be on top of. I think there's something unique about being able to do that work and then also be able to do the creative work. I find that a lot of musicians I know just aren't practical enough to be able to produce themselves, because it really requires a different set of skills that, for better or for worse, I have. Sometimes I wish I didn't. But, I could just be over there consorting with my muse in the corner and not be wondering about whether anyone's checked on the catering. But it makes it a very handcrafted, homemade sort of cottage industry that I'm working within. And I guess all the skills come in very handy in the new paradigm, because you have to be self-reliant and you have to do things on your own these days, because the labels don't do them. If you even have a label, they don't do those things anymore.
Do you miss having those things done?
Some of the things, yeah, I do. I mean, nobody's sending me piles of portfolios to look at of stylists anymore. No one's taking me out shopping for free anymore. I mean, the labels are, there's just no money. It's just all gone. It's over. There was some fun sometimes, dinners after the show in restaurants. That doesn't happen anymore either. It's all over. Even the business class tickets are over. If I get sent to Europe to do a publicity tour, I'm flying coach, and that's changed. Not that I ever, you know, required that kind of pampering, but it was nice that when, you know, you would always say, "Oh, the record company's paying for it," but now the record company doesn't pay for anything. Funny.
And I think there's something about growing up in the record industry, which in a way you did. And you're looking at it now, you know, forgive me for saying it, but you're looking at it now as a middle-aged woman. And I think some of that...
How dare you?
I know.
Call me a middle-aged woman.
I'm older than you, so I can say that.
Okay. And the thing is, I'm far beyond middle-aged, because I don't plan to live to be 100 years old. So.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, but I think some of that, you know, certainly that maturity, and certainly that you get to a point in your life where you can write the songs that are on this album. You could never, I don't think you could have written these when you were 25, because you hadn't lived. You hadn't had that experience. There seems to be space now for voices like yours.
Well, I never really considered myself a pop artist, so I just thought of myself as a musician. I didn't self-categorize.
Mm-hmm.
So gave myself a lot of latitude, topics that I could sing about, instruments I could include on my records. And so for me to work with string quartets or woodwinds, it's not that big of a transition for me, because it's always been there a bit. And my music was never based in standard blues progressions. It never really felt like rock music. And from the very beginning, acoustic instruments were there. But it's true, I think the perspectives that I have now on human nature and on the human experience are so different after living for 50 years and giving birth to a child, helping my mother die, saying goodbye to several of my close friends who've passed on. I mean, I just, things that I had no understanding of years ago. I mean, there's joys and sorrows that I just, unless you're a very exceptional person who is given exceptional circumstances, you don't get to feel those things until you're older, because they're just experiences that are meant for older people.
Well, we are looking forward to having you back here.
Well, I'm looking forward to the show. And I'm bringing a big band. There's a 9-piece band, and we're not doing very many shows, so I'm excited to come and show you the live version of the album.
Yeah. Is this the first, is this the beginning of the tour?
No, we actually went on tour in the summer, in July, and I think we did 6 shows, and I was so sick, I ended up in the hospital, and we had to cancel, and this is a, I think this might be one of the shows we had to reschedule.
It is. It is. Yeah. Yep. I remember that. Well, I'm so glad you're better.
Oh, my. Thank you.
And for all kinds of reasons, because there's more music I know that will need to come out. So stick around for a while. We need to hear it.
Okay.
Natalie, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you speaking with us.
All right. Take care, Bonnie.